KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Facebook has been mired in controversy for months over its business practices, which allowed fake news and hate speech to run rampant and provided a platform for foreign interference in U.S. elections. Now, CEO Mark Zuckerberg is asking the government to help regulate Facebook and other social networks. He outlined his proposal in an op-ed for The Washington Post over the weekend. We'll talk with industry watchers about why Zuckerberg is making the recommendations, what they think of them, and the feasibility of government curtailing fake news, data breaches, and extremism on social networks. And that's all next, after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In an opinion piece in the Washington Post this weekend, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg detailed four areas where he says Facebook and other social media companies should be regulated, including election security, privacy, and data protection. He also addressed harmful content and the proliferation of hate speech and terrorist propaganda, saying he's come around to agreeing with lawmakers who say Facebook shouldn't be making those kinds of decisions about speech on its own. Joining me to discuss the op-ed and what we should do about Facebook and regulation of social media companies is Mike Isaac, here in studio, technology reporter for The New York Times. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Also good to have with us Pete Suderman. And Pete Suderman is senior editor of Reason Magazine, and he joins us this morning as well. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And also glad to have Natasha Tusikov. She's assistant professor in the criminology program at the Department of Social Sciences at York University and author of a book called Choke Points, Global Private Regulation on the Internet. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
Good to have you as us as well. And Mike Isaac, let's begin with you. Some would say that it's rather strange for Mark Zuckerberg to be establishing rules for the Internet since he was mainly part of the problem, as many see it. Now he's giving solutions.
I think that's right. I think, probably for the past at least 2 or 3 years now, Facebook has seen some of the writing on the wall since the election. I would say most of Facebook's history and life, the company has avoided a lot of regulator scrutiny and sort of done what it wanted to as far as product building, as far as acquisitions go. And so since 2016, folks started taking a closer look at how these social networks work, how ads are served, what types of ads. And now you're hearing like a sort of growing call for regulation in Washington. So Zuckerberg's logic, I imagine, is if we're going to get regulated, it sort of seems like it's inevitable. So we might as well tell them how to regulate us exactly.
It's also a way of, I suppose, maybe beginning the process of making sure that the regulations go the way Facebook would want them to go. I mean, I read the regulations. I read the op-ed. And essentially what he's putting forward is in some way self-serving. This is what we're doing and this is what we want to do.
Yeah, totally. I think the last topic that he talked about, data portability, I think was probably the most self-serving to me. Part of that essentially means I could take my friend list or contacts that I have on Facebook, pick it up and go to another network at some point.
Those other networks being Instagram possibly or WhatsApp or Messenger,
yeah.
In other words, Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook's
networks.
Own companies or, you know, technically He would say, well, you could go to Google Plus if that still existed or some other outside network. But I think the argument really is a protection against eventually breaking up Facebook at some point, which is something that he's very concerned about. And the argument would be, look, if you can take your data anywhere, which, again, is questionable and kind of difficult to do, then you shouldn't break up my company.
He's also saying let the lawmakers decide a lot of this, and putting it onto the lawmakers who don't necessarily understand the model or the features of the model is in some ways kind of myopic, isn't it?
I think you're right. I think, if you kick it back to Washington, which, again, doesn't really know how to regulate this thing in the first place. And to be clear, like Mark Zuckerberg doesn't fully know all about the monster he created himself. So if you give them the guidelines and say, look, these are the four problem areas we think we can do better in, plus have them write the rules for you whenever people get upset at the next outrage, you can sort of kick the can back to D.C.
Well, let's talk about the rules here. Peter Sitterman, you have some concerns, particularly about speech, harsh speech, as it's often described. And those concerns have to do with, I think maybe I can epitomize a little bit of your attitude toward it by quoting Matthew Berry, the FCC chair, chief of staff, who said, we don't need the government to regulate. What we need is the First Amendment.
Well, I think the First Amendment obviously plays a huge role in protecting all Americans' right to speech, and obviously we should respect that. My concern here is actually a lot along the lines of what you were talking about, which is that it seems to me that Facebook is attempting to get out ahead of regulation and to write those regulations, basically to write regulations for themselves that will be self-serving and that will make it more difficult for competitors. And I think it's really worrying whenever you have a situation where Washington legislators who really don't understand how technology works are attempting to write rules and regulations around that technology. What you end up having is a situation in which Mark Zuckerberg is looking at this, I think, and saying, you know what? They're going to come for me. Instead of making the government my enemy, let's make them my partner. And let's turn Facebook into effectively a regulated public utility in which all of the profits flow to me.
And also, we don't break up, right? Or we don't get broken up. Yeah.
Certainly, Facebook and the other big tech companies are not going to want to be broken up at all. And, you know, I think there's problems with the antitrust model that you now hear on the campaign trail from folks like Elizabeth Warren as well. So they're trying to avoid that. And in many ways, the tech companies of today learned the lessons of Microsoft, which in the 1990s started out saying, well, we don't need an office in Washington. We have no business there. That's not what we do. We're a West Coast tech company. We make office software, productivity software. Who in the world is going to come for us? Legislation is not our business. And then, of course, they spent about 10 years nearly being broken up through antitrust actions that came out of Washington. And the next generation of tech companies really looked at that and said, wow, that is a real threat. We need to be ahead of that. We need to have presence in Washington. We need to be influencing regulation wherever and whenever we can. And you see that with pretty massive spending on lobbying by the big tech companies here in D.C.
And let me go to you, if I may, Natasha Tusikov. You've called Facebook a bad actor. Does that mean they shouldn't even be involved in this kind of putting forward of regulations?
Well, I think it's always concerning when we have a company really positioning itself as a as setting the regulatory agenda. So Facebook has been prodded, forced into this position because of Cambridge Analytica, because of the Christchurch attacks, because of fomenting a genocide in Burma. So I don't think we should think of Facebook as benignly suggesting these rules. Facebook's been pushed into this position, as the other two commentators have said, and then is trying to see what rules might be most advantageous for it. And I think what's really important to underline is Facebook operates globally from a U.S. base. So sitting here in Toronto, I'm a Canadian, and whenever I read Mark Zuckerberg make the latest pronouncement of how Facebook will be regulated, I always think, how will that affect people here in Canada? So certainly what I'm calling for in an article I published with Dr. Blaine Haggard is national rules. Right, especially for smaller countries. We aren't in the European Union. We aren't in the United States. How should smaller companies deal with these large social media platforms? And when Zuckerberg is positing global rules, that really doesn't give the ability of smaller companies to set any standards.
But you've said, I think, that the European Union's General Data Protection Network or regulation is perhaps a good idea, a viable idea, and that's something that Zuckerberg is in favor of, isn't it?
Yeah, that's something that he's in favor of now. It certainly wasn't, he wasn't in favor in May 2018 when it came out. So this is a sudden embrace of the European privacy regulation. And I think an embrace to stave off privacy legislation coming through, you know, that's already come through in California, that's being considered tentatively at the federal level in the United States. So I think recognizing that Zuckerberg is suddenly an advocate for privacy raises a little cynicism, definitely.
And if I could go back to you, Peter Sitterman, I'm interested in finding out about what you think of the idea of 2.7 billion users of Facebook being essentially monitored for what is going to be described as harmful content. Zuckerberg has put forward the idea that maybe there can be a board that would decide what these standards ought to be. And he's even said, you know, it's going to be very difficult to monitor. In fact, just today, Bloomberg reported that YouTube executives ignored warnings about toxic videos running rampant. And that kind of feeds into what we're talking about here in terms of just the difficulty of the scale of this thing.
So for one thing, I should probably start by saying that I'm probably less concerned than a lot of people about foreign interference in elections through Facebook. I mean, if you look at the Russian operation, there were memes posted, but it was pretty silly stuff. It wasn't the sort of thing that seems sort of high, you know, high level, very professional. I mean, it was really a kind of low level trollish effort. Even a lot of the reporting has really called it amateurish and sloppy. And same with things like fake news, where if you look at some of the studies that have come out even in the last couple of months, fake news is just much less of a problem than it has been portrayed. But I think what we're seeing here in terms of Zuckerberg saying, well, we need to be looking at harmful content and we need to have a board and we need to sort of set up some sort of structure to deal with this, is that Zuckerberg does not want to have the responsibility for this. And so he is trying to set up some sort of structure to avoid any sort of liability. And we've seen conservatives talk about changing Section 230, which is a sort of a 90s era law that that basically says that platforms like Facebook cannot be held liable for things that are posted on their platforms by users. And Facebook is obviously going to be very worried about that. And that's that push is largely coming from the right, from folks like Senator Josh Hawley, Republican from Missouri. And his argument is that, well, you know, Facebook is discriminating against conservative viewpoints. And if you actually look at what he wants to do in terms of changing things like Section 230, it would allow more censorship and more discrimination. What Section 230 does right now is it actually creates the ground rules for platforms like Facebook, like Twitter, like other social media companies to be able to operate and to be able to create these businesses that allow millions of people to express themselves in ways and without, you know, sort of without creating a huge legal liability or a requirement for some sort of censorship on the part of the on the part of social media companies.
So if I go back to you for a moment here, Natasha Tusikov, Facebook is protecting itself here, saving itself, trying to exact what it can in terms of slowing down the process of government regulation by saying we're going to be partners?
Like all companies, all companies would put forward their preferred regulatory strategies. This isn't anything different. I think what's problematic about this is Zuckerberg is really attempting to shape the debate. So in his Washington Post article to say these are the four areas, and look at that, we're talking about his four areas. And what I have a problem with is someone who is part of the industry that should be regulated is really setting the frame of debate to say these are the areas we should be concerned about, these are the type of regulatory strategies we can consider. And I would argue that what we really need to do is take a few steps back and say, how is Facebook problematic? What are the different ways, strategies, regulatory strategies we can impose to try and correct that? If we need to engage with tech, of course we'll do that, a wide public engagement. But just to go from one person's view and say, then this is how we'll impose it, that's incredibly problematic.
And if I could go back to you, Mike Isaac, again, as technology reporter of the New York Times, there's been a lot of difficulty determining what is or isn't a political ad. Lawmakers are going to decide that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, go back to, you know, the beginning of Facebook in 2004 for the past 15 years. the company has had virtually no regulation exist on, you know, how people can advertise politically across the network, right? And that's very different than how TV and radio is operated. And one could argue that that type of regulation is long overdue. And I think in 08, it really began with President Obama's sort of digital strategy of using Facebook effectively. And then in 16, you know, that continued. So I think now they're still sort of working that out. You know, we've already had the big point to me on a lot of this is Facebook is sort of like no one's ever happy with Facebook whenever it makes a decision. So it doesn't want to have to make the decisions itself, really. They just want to sort of say, OK, Washington made this decision. So we're just following it and you can get mad with them. So that, you know, trickles down to what is or is not a political ad, that trickles down to speech and what constitutes hate speech on the network. And instead of letting the problem du jour govern what they're going to be doing that day, they can just sort of shift the blame over.
Well, what do you, our listeners, think about all this? Zuckerberg asking the government to help regulate hate speech and political ads and coming out with essentially four ways of moving Facebook forward in partnership, in effect, with lawmakers and regulators to help him run Facebook. And we'd like to hear from you. We invited Facebook to join us. They declined, but we'd like to hear from you, our listeners. Our toll-free number is available, and you can join us now. The number to call, 866-733-6786. We welcome your call. So let's find out what you think about this and any questions you might have. Again, the number to join us, 866-733-6786, or you can email us right now, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post questions or comments there at kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Mike Isaac here in studio, tech reporter with The New York Times. Peter Sutterman with us is senior editor for Reason Magazine, and Natasha Tusikov is assistant professor in the criminology program in the Department of Social Science at York University up in Canada. She's also the author of Choke Points, Global Private Regulation on the Internet. Please feel free to join the program, and we'll go to your calls forthwith. Let me go to a comment from Lurleen, who says there needs to be some real accountability here for a change. Who decides how tightly this media will be regulated, and how is it going to be done? Big questions, and I think questions that loom over this, Mike. And one might also ask, what about these other media companies and how they feel this? They're going to be dragging along on this. Huh?
It's really funny. I was talking to a few of my sources yesterday, and a lot of other companies are grumbling at Facebook right now because Facebook is in the crosshairs, and Mark Zuckerberg is essentially saying, "Look, we need to spread the anger around to all of the companies. We need to regulate all of us, not just Facebook." Which I don't think is necessarily wrong, but it's also not making him any friends with Google or Twitter or Apple or any of the companies in the Valley. But I do think it's important to think about the context around what time we're in right now. If you look back to 2012, 2013, this was like the post-Snowden era when, you know, folks had a lot of distrust in the government and what they were able to monitor and perhaps censor on some of these platforms. And now you move towards now where, speech is more of a concern. Maybe people want more regulation or control over speech. And I think a lot of it depends on the political climate and how people feel about the intervention of the government right now. So who knows what it'll be in another 4 or 5 years. Maybe it'll swing back the other way.
But a board? Who's going to appoint those members of the board? Who's going to serve on that board to decide what hate speech is or isn't?
That's right. I mean, he gives very few specifics and, again, wants to sort of, because Natasha's point, like it's a Western company based in Silicon Valley, you know, like they shouldn't be necessarily governing all of this. So the wider the breadth, I think probably the better. But I don't know who's going to choose those.
And Natasha Tusikov, you mentioned what's been going on with Burma, with Facebook, Myanmar. And I mean, what do these regulations do along those lines, if anything?
And I think it's important to remember, first of all, you know, kind of a beginning point, all speech is regulated, right? So in Germany, it's you can't do Holocaust denial, right? Sure. Thailand bans insult to the monarchy. So countries have specific types of speech, specific speech acts that they forbid. So I think to recognize that, and Facebook already complies with that, and Facebook has its own sometimes very capricious types of content it bans, right? So we know Facebook for a long time has had a problem with breastfeeding women. Right, even if it's quite discreet, any small glimpse of a nipple, and Facebook would ban that. So we already, these companies ban certain types of content that's perfectly legal, but might be seen as, you know, inappropriate. But how that will be decided in different countries, we really need to bring in the idea that different countries around the world need to be able to make their own rules. And that's something that Facebook will push back quite strongly against, because companies like that want global rules. They want a free flow of data. If there are different conflicting regulatory frameworks around the world, it makes it much more difficult to operate a global social media platform.
But it does mean you can have a common framework.
Yeah, you could have a common technical framework, but you might have specific speech rules for each country.
Yeah, understood. And some pushback here. Peter Suderman, let me go to you on this. A listener writes, neither regulation nor the lack of it is perfect, but Facebook acknowledging this, either for perfect or imperfect reasons, is progress. And then another listener, Ron, says, I have no connection with Mark Zuckerberg, but your criticisms of him make no sense to me. What could Zuckerberg do or say that wouldn't deserve your criticism?
It's what Zuckerberg could do is take responsibility for the thing that he's built. And he built something that a lot of people use, that a lot of people like. I can't say I'm personally a big fan of Facebook. My account has been, I suspended it myself early last year and haven't gone back. But it's a product that a lot of people use and a lot of people like. And but it's also because of that, because of its success, it is a product that a lot of people have a lot of opinions about how it should be run and operated. And the person who ultimately is responsible for that is Mark Zuckerberg in terms of how Facebook is going to be run and operated. But I want to go back actually to the question, the first question you read from a reader about who decides. And I think that's a good one and an important one to discuss. And to me, the answer is you, the user. And that's one thing that all of us can do, is decide what kinds of content we want to see in our feeds. We can shape and structure the feeds, whether it's in Facebook, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Instagram, through our choices, through our activities, through our behaviors. And if we don't want to see any of it, it's actually really easy not to have any Facebook in your life at all. Like I said, I do this. I have not been on Facebook myself for over a year. Haven't looked back. It's great, and it's very easy to do that. And so I reject the idea that there is some sort of broader governmental responsibility to determine this for you, especially when the government has consistently proven itself so bad at figuring out how tech works, where it's going to go, what the state of the market is and what it should be and what it will be. And again, if you go back to Microsoft in the 1990s, you know, a big part of the argument there was that Internet Explorer was so thoroughly built into Microsoft's Windows operating system that no one would ever really have a chance to build a competitor. Microsoft's Internet Explorer as a thing basically doesn't exist anymore, and there are plenty of competitors out there anymore. But that was the thinking of the government and of the pro-regulatory crowd at the time. They got it wrong, and I think it's worth remembering that.
It's also worth remembering the government doesn't have a periscope about these things and can't see around the corners. I think the Microsoft example serves us well, at least under that illumination. And you can join this conversation again. I invite you to do that. The number to call, 866-733-6786. When we return, we'll take your phone calls. Again, we're talking about Mark Zuckerberg asking the government to help regulate a number of things with Facebook, and the government probably is moving in that direction. So is Mark Zuckerberg. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about regulating Facebook with Mike Isaac, technology reporter for The New York Times, Peter Suderman, who is senior editor of Reason Magazine, and Natasha Tusikov, who is assistant professor in the criminology program at York University. I want to go right to your calls, and let's begin with Wendy. Wendy, join us. Morning.
Hi, Michael. Thank you so much for taking my call. This is a very important topic. I would like to address the article by saying that it seems as if Mark Zuckerberg is quite disingenuous with his suggestions. My son has been stalked for a year on Instagram, which Facebook owns. His stalkers create fake accounts posing as him, And then they use those accounts to direct message women and sexually harass them. He also, the stalker also creates women that are fake on Instagram saying that they've been sexually harassed by my son. Instagram has no response when we reach out to them to say, please take these fake accounts down. Their reporting tools don't work. We get robotic, nonsensical answers back. So he's basically pushing the burden onto us and requiring us, you know, to hire an attorney to try to go the legal route. Recently, we met with Jerry Hill's office, and we were shocked to find out that in Sacramento, there are no legislative bodies, no caucuses, no committees addressing any sort of cyber crime. So I don't know what we can do, but I think a conversation is the first place to start. And I think trying to get our lawmakers to understand how the tools are being weaponized is a very important place to begin.
Well, I think you've said it well. And Mike Isaac, this is an ongoing serious problem. I mean, particularly the lack of responsiveness from Instagram, Facebook, Google, all the rest of them.
Yeah, I think this is like an exact test case of something that happens. You know, Facebook will respond quickly to something that gets raised in the press or that gets raised by legislators, because that just sort of is a way to tamp down on a potential PR nightmare. But what I think people at Facebook would argue is, at the sheer scale of a company like Facebook, which, like you said, serves across all its apps 2.7 billion people, there are going to be problems, like terrible problems like this, that we are just only now realizing some of the bad stuff that people can do online. And I think the proposition that Facebook folks make, or that employees who work there come down to at the end of the day, say there's far more good that happens on Facebook than there are bad things that happen on Facebook. Therefore, I can rationalize working at this company. But, you know, scenarios like the one we just heard from Wendy are terrible. And there's no real effective solution at the scale of this company, I think.
Let me thank Wendy for her call, and we'll go to some more calls. Before I do, I want to go to a tweet here that raises, seems to me, another very profound question. And let me go to you on this, Natasha Tuskov. Joe tweets, can government regulate at the speed of innovation?
And this is a common complaint. The amount of content that's uploaded, the fast-moving nature, the fact that we have live streaming, it's very, very difficult. But I think if we look at some of the bigger problems with the company's business models, the fact that they're advertising-based, that they suck up users' data in order to monetize this type of content, that the idea that viral content, whether it's toxic or not, you know, perpetuates more eyeballs. This is part of the problem. The speed is part of the problem. But I think we should remember, nothing says that it has to be this fast, right? Facebook could slow it down. Facebook could get rid of Facebook Live. Things don't need to be instantaneous.
Well, Peter Suderman,
I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't realize you were finishing your sentence.
No, I was going to say, this is part of the problem when the companies rely on technology. So yeah. Zuckerberg, Jack Dorsey of Twitter, the CEOs of Google, when they are called before, you know, the U.S. Congress, what they rely on and what they push is technological answers, right? Better algorithms. And what we're seeing is that these algorithms are just not good enough, and that we have technological solutions to problems that are far too complex. And I think it's high time that we consider other solutions, and that self-regulation of these tech companies just isn't working, as your previous caller, Wendy, really showed.
Yeah, it's often the algorithms against human difficulties and human limitations, as we heard in Wendy's kind of despair that she's going through. Here's a tweet. Let me go to you on this, Peter Suderman. This is from Emily, who says, the day I realized that we are the product, and you were talking about how people are really what makes Facebook one way or the other. The day I realized this, Emily says, I stopped posting anything new. Why doesn't Facebook pay their users? We create their profits.
It is the case that you get Facebook for free because there is profit being made off the fact that you go back to the site and look and you post information about yourself, and that information is then used for Facebook to build its product and to help its advertisers. And again, this is a thing that where people have a choice, and a choice that your commenter there made was to not post anything new. You can choose to not post anything at all. You can choose to not be on Facebook. You can choose to block terrible feeds, people who irritate you, people who you just don't want to hear from because they're boring. And in terms of some of the harassment that we see on Facebook, Wendy's story is just awful, and I feel horrible for her. And I will say that you see this on social media, online, on a regular basis, not just on Facebook, though. And I think it's not quite right to think of this as a Facebook problem so much as something that is just part of communications technology. And, you know, I grew up before the Facebook era. It started right at the very end of when I was in college. But we had AOL and Instant Messenger. And I knew kids who were harassed brutally on AOL Instant Messenger. And we just don't think about that as a problem all that much anymore. And it wasn't because the government came in and set rules for AOL Instant Messenger. It was because America Online kind of failed as a business model and other things have risen up to take its place. And you can go back to telephone harassment and all of these things.
But the bullying and the weaponizing continues. It's just different ages.
These are problems that are built in, inherent into communications technology. And I think, you know, it's a mistake to say, well, it's a specifically Facebook problem or specifically a Twitter problem. These are things that we need to sort of figure out and deal with as a society, and that we have been figuring out and dealing with as a society for decades now as communications technology has advanced.
There's another caller joining us. Ali, I'm sorry, Natasha Tusikov. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, could I just jump in there for a second as to what Peter was saying? Part of the problem is that Facebook, Google, Twitter, they're actually monetizing hate. They're monetizing vicious, trolling, toxic behavior. So perhaps before, when AOL trolls were a bug, not a feature, trolls are a feature of Facebook. And I think that's the problem when we look at specific recommendation algorithms that drive people on YouTube towards more and more extremist content, conspiracy theories. That's not a bug. That's a feature of how YouTube works. So if this isn't something that's going to simply evolve out of YouTube's business model without some type of external regulation.
Well, point well taken. Let me get Ali on next. Ali, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Well, good morning.
Hi.
I would just like to say that I agree with the gentleman that government regulation should not be any part of the equation. They have truly proven themselves over time to not be able to regulate. So that's really all I want to say. There's other formats, there's other ways to go. I'd like to look at them, but no government regulation.
All right. You're on record, Ali. Thank you for the call. Appreciate hearing from you, and we'll hear next from Andrew. Andrew, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to just express a comment and get your guest's reaction. My own opinion is that these technologies have perhaps been developed without a firm moral compass. And I agreed with one of your guests in saying that compass should probably be directed by individual choice and sovereignty as the best way to exercise your approach to how you live online and whatnot. And I'd love to see a company develop the technology and protocols that would give individuals sovereignty over their online identity. But I wanted to give a counterargument, I guess following on the heels of Ali. One of your other guests suggested that countries should have sovereignty over their internet and the information that flows there. And I understand the point of view that emanates from, but I work a lot with China in business, and that is exactly China's line. And I find it odd that we be advancing an argument where China almost seems prescient in wanting to control the flow of information. It just seems like a very slippery slope. And I just want to get your guest's reaction. You know, in the absence of a technological set of tools and protocols that give individual sovereignty, if we have the government get engaged, where does it stop?
Peter Sitterman, let me go to you on that.
Well, I've talked a lot so far about why it's bad, why there would be problems for the United States government to regulate entities like Facebook. But the caller does raise a really good point, which is that it's not just the United States; it's other companies like China. And if you look at the United States, you know, I would say that a big reason why we don't want Congress making these regulations is because they just don't really understand the technology. They don't really know what's coming around the corner in terms of the marketplace. And so what they would end up doing is basically freezing today's state in place and making Facebook, like I said, a public utility. But if you end up with China setting a lot of these rules, and China is a big player in the global scene right now, and they are arguably America's foremost economic competitor, and technology is a big part of their economy right now. If you end up with China setting these rules, it's not just that they're going to be kind of incompetent at it. It's that they are going to have values that are expressly contrary to American values. And I think that that's something that we should really be concerned about and really be worried about.
And we'll bring more callers aboard. We go to you next, Adam. Adam, you're on.
Yes. Hi. I'm interested in the discussion about public utilities or perhaps a public trust.
I think we look.
Whether it's... you know, phone companies or electricity. I mean, it's gotten to the size that, you know, you cannot just move fast and break things. And also the question of, like, whether angling for, you know, like increasing your quarterly earnings is really the most important thing for something that, like, at this point has been used to accelerate ethnic cleansing in Myanmar.
Yeah, I brought up Myanmar before, and I think it's important to once again put it under scrutiny here. But Mike Isaac, let me go to you on this whole idea again about public utility.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, an absolutely reasonable question to look at Facebook as, you know, what if we do consider it a sort of utility at this point? But I do think about, you know, Peter and him sort of expunging it entirely from his life and saying we all have the choice to do that, and that's entirely possible too. I think that the main question for me is, should these companies be trusted to regulate themselves? And they will always come back with saying, yes, we should. And you know, Zuckerberg is saying we've started to realize how bad humanity can be. Suddenly, after his 34 years on Earth, he suddenly realized
34 years of kumbaya, we all gonna connect. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I mean, personally, I think they're always going to make the argument that they know better. But to someone's earlier point, you know, with the regards to the moral compass of the people building the products, I think morals play less of a part than the idea that growth of the company is the most important thing of all. And so if you're building with the idea that you only need to capture market share, that you need to grow and you need to do that at the expense or cost of your competitors like YouTube or Twitter or whatever, then some pretty horrible things can go by the wayside and become sort of casualties of that.
And Mike Isaac again is technology reporter for the New York Times. And here's Tom. Tom, you're on.
I agree with that last point, and that's one of the reasons that China should be regulated equally in our U.S. market to the way any American companies are. And equally, they should have access to our markets only when we have access to their markets. But the reason I called was to address something earlier you mentioned, which is that the way Facebook makes money is by selling user information. That is not the only way they make money. As Zuckerberg said in front of Congress, they make money off of advertising. And in Europe, where the selling of personal information is much more highly regulated, I don't know if they can't do it at all, but it's much more highly regulated, they're still making money, plenty of money off of their advertising.
Point well taken, Tom. I thank you for that. And we'll go right to another caller, and that's Matt. Matt, join us.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
The question I have is, I guess, goes to why we need the regulation. And I'm wondering how much of it is due to the fact that people can hide behind anonymity. Do we get the bad actors that make these sites toxic because of online anonymity? And Is there a way to address that that might perhaps reduce the toxicity that these sites promulgate? And I'll take my answer off the
All right, and thank you for that question, Professor Tuskov. Let me go back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Anonymity does embolden people. You feel a distance when you can insult them and harass them, and you feel some kind of protection. But to talk about removing anonymity totally, I think we also have to remember that there's perfectly viable uses for anonymity, like journalists, activists, democracy activists in authoritarian countries, people trying to flee domestic violence abuse, people who are trying to raise awareness about very sensitive subjects, right, like sexual violence in some countries. So there are good uses of anonymity. So requiring a real name policy can be really problematic, as Facebook found out when it tried to introduce its real name policy.
I'm going to read some comments, getting some pushback in different directions. Here's Cisco, who writes, Facebook is a social forum, not a news nor a political forum. Please join by choice, yet there are many... people joined by choice, yet there are many who use it as a political platform. Facebook forbids hate speech on its own. If we start regulating Facebook, where do we stop? And there again is the slippery slope argument. But here's another listener, and let me go to you on this, Peter Sitterman. This listener says, one of your guests, and I think it was you, Peter, said they are not worried about the amateurish Russian memes that appeared on Facebook to influence the 2016 election, but those memes were influential in that election. It seems that this should be one of the main concerns in regulating Facebook, particularly in the United States.
I would actually just dispute the premise there. There is so far no really strong evidence that the Facebook memes were actually influential. Now,
How do you measure or quantify that?
Right. So, and people have tried, and they have looked, and they've said, well, we can't figure out whether these had any effect at all. And again, I would just encourage people to actually go and look at the memes. The New York Times, Slate, other publications have published these images, and they're just silly. There's no other way to describe them. They are sloppy, trollish, amateur, silly images. And again, you know, if you look at a study that came out just last January in terms of fake news and whether it had an influence on the election, the authors from New York University and Princeton, I believe, and they basically said, first of all, sharing of fake news, as we've defined it, is incredibly rare, and we can find no reason, no evidence that it swayed the election at all. And so I think a lot of these narratives have been really overstated. I'm not saying that nothing ever happens on Facebook, that nobody ever shares anything that's fake, or that nobody ever shares anything that's trollish, and certainly...
I think there's evidence that proves that there has been evidence shared that's fake.
Certainly, Russia did engage in propaganda, but whether that propaganda had a significant effect, I think, is not something that has been proven at all.
Well, here's Paul, who writes, Facebook is not subject to the First Amendment as a private entity. I'm afraid if the government tries to institute rules and regulations regarding online speech, they'll be thrown out by the courts. It's an interesting argument, Professor Tsutsuko.
That is a challenge. I'm not a U.S. constitutional expert, but whenever you have the state directly suppressing or censoring speech in the United States, that is an issue. I think it's important to remember that we already have governments around the world working behind the scenes to pressure some of these social media companies to try and take down extremist content, hateful content, embarrassing content from opposition parties. So part of what I'm calling for is this to be out in the open. If countries really want to regulate a certain type of speech, then they should pass a law openly, have that debated, have that considered by the public, by experts, by other lawmakers. The United States does pose a special case, and I think it's important that, you know, as a Canadian here, to represent the rest of the world. Some readers and commentators were talking about American values, but this is a global network, and not all countries share a U.S.-style First Amendment free speech. In Canada, speech is much more circumscribed. We have tougher hate speech legislation than the United States. So it's certainly within other countries' rights to pass laws to protect speech that accords with our political and cultural values. And one commentator was talking about a balkanized internet, a fractured internet. Mm-hmm. And China is often raised as the boogeyman, and it is an authoritarian country with very strict censorship. Certainly, I don't advocate joining that. But just to have your own rules doesn't make you like China. Brazil, India, a number of countries have expressed an interest in exerting more sovereignty over the internet in their country. And part of that is because of the undue commercial influence of the United States.
Here's a tweet from Chuck who says, every few weeks I get another reason to feel good about deleting my Facebook account. Mike Isaac, a question for you. Since you've talked to a lot of the tech people through the years and have covered, it's been your beat and all, one of the things that I find difficult to understand is why, it's not only Facebook, but the big media giant companies, as a general rule, when they're invited on programs like this where they can talk directly to the public, always say no.
Oh, why?
Maybe I'm asking you to read minds here, but it's puzzling to me because they do say that they want, you know, to engage the public and get the public to respond to them and so forth. And they have PR departments, certainly. But this, something like this comes up and it's always can't get anybody available.
I think the premise of your show is forum. And I think there's nothing worse for a company than an open forum that they can't control. And so, you know, people coming directly to them and giving questions like you have with your callers on the air or even with your guests, that's just, it's sort of why Zuckerberg posted the thing over the weekend in the first place. They want to frame the terms of the argument. They want to sort of decide the questions coming to them. And, you know, a lot of the time they can because they have corporate blogs that they post to, or Mark Zuckerberg posts to his Facebook page, and that dictates a lot of the coverage afterwards. So it gives people like you and me a little more cause for concern because they can start framing things more easily than we can.
Another point from a listener who writes, choosing not to be on Facebook is increasingly untenable when so much of business and social activities are conducted on Facebook. We're going to go to more of your calls, and let's go next to a caller in San Rafael, and that's you, Paul. You're on. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering about if we had an independent panel like we do for drawing congressional districts in California, say, with qualified but independent members, if that would be a way to at least regulate what has to do with, say, elections and politics on social media, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's not far off the mark of what Zuckerberg's recommending here. Peter Suderman, you want to respond?
Well, that's probably the model that they would go with if they tried to do something like that. But I think that raises a couple of problems. And the first is just the really obvious one of who ends up on that panel and who selects who ends up on that panel. And so you're really not solving the problem so much as shifting the fight to a different forum. It's not a fight about the rules specifically. It's a fight about who is making the rules. But the other thing I would say is that I think we should be really worried. You mentioned a panel that would specifically go after and think about political speech. The First Amendment in the United States is primarily about protecting political speech. That is arguably its most important purpose. And so setting up a board of regulators, whether it is quasi-private or quasi-or fully public, setting up a board of regulators with any kind of government authority to police speech online is, I think, something that would run afoul of the First Amendment and of America's commitment to free and open political debate in any forum.
And here's Chad. Chad, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello?
Yeah. Good morning, Chad.
Hi. Yeah, this is more towards a comment Peter made about some of the issues being common to our communications technology going back to telephones. I just wanted to point out that, you know, Facebook started with this hot or not program that Mark Zuckerberg developed in college that went viral. And I'm sure he was a giddy kid laughing, seeing this all happening. And, you know, it's certainly you can question the morality of what he was doing at that point.
We should mention, just for the record here, excuse me for interrupting you, Chad, that by hot or not, he meant evaluating young women.
Exactly. And I just want to point out that there's something qualitatively different in this new technology. When you could call somebody on a phone, everybody understood what was going on. And when you have this kind of technology where things can go unpredictably viral and used in ways that the creator didn't know about or maybe conjectured about but didn't realize would be used that way. We've got a different sort of issue here. And it's, we don't, when Peter says, well, you can control privacy settings, this, who's that, it's a complicated, complicated system that very few people really understand. Many people sign up for Facebook. They have no idea that their stuff is public until 3 months later. You know, this stuff is complicated, and it's qualitatively different. There's a viral component that we can't control. And this is why, you know, we're kind of in the mess that we're in. So something is really shifted, and it's not just a matter of, oh, it's problems that we've always dealt with communication, and we just need to sort of live with it. I think there's something different going on, and we're seeing it. And, you know, this is my comment, and I'll stop there.
Well, it's an important comment, and it's well stated.
I would just note there that Hot or Not was not created by Mark Zuckerberg. He didn't have anything to do with it. It was created by a couple of University of California Berkeley grads.
Well, he had a Harvard program that was similar to that. I don't know if it was called Hot or Not, but it was pretty much based on the same idea. You evaluate women and how they look.
But the program that was that was mentioned there that started all of this, which I remember being passed around. It was happened when I was in college. Mark Zuckerberg wasn't involved in that at all.
You're talking about different programs, I believe. Mike Isaac?
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, you are technically right, Peter. It was not the Hot or Not, but it was the same sort of premise. Like, part of why Facebook was started was a sort of like rating system for women in the college Facebook at Harvard.
We've just got seconds left. Professor Tutsikov, I'd like to go to you and just where would you like to see this moving at this point? Where would you like to see it progressing to?
Well, I understand the concern of people, the cynicism towards government, but I would point out that government regulates really complex areas of social and business, like financial markets, right? Like markets for derivatives. So governments are able to set rules, enforce rules in very complex areas of social life. That's not political speech, but it points to the ability of governments to regulate very technically complex areas. So I would hope that we would have a dialogue where we can honestly evaluate the ability of governments to effectively set rules in this area.
We will leave it there, and I thank you, Natasha Tutsikov. Thank you also, Peter Suderman, and thank you, Mike Isaac, and thank you, our listeners. Always good to have you listening to us, and we hope you will continue to listen to us. We've got another hour of Forum up ahead. Dave Eggers is going to join us. We're going to talk about his new novel and his experience in El Paso, where he came to the conclusion that Trump may indeed be electable back in 2020, or forward, I should say, in 2020. Stay tuned for that. It's up ahead, and thank you for being part of this hour, and for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis. On view through April 14th, Blue and Yellow Corridor, an iconic work by Bruce Nauman, realized on the very grounds where the artist conceived it.